And, you know, we don't have to stay beholden to those things. We don't have to allow those things to control our life. We can't change the past. We can't change things that have happened to us. We can only move forward with those things. But, you know, God has a miraculous way of taking, you know, a life that's broken and restoring it to something beautiful, something that he can use. And so whether you've been through something like that or something minor or anywhere in between, you know, God wants to use us. God desires to use us. We serve a God that can overcome the things that we have faced in our life. There's no problem too big. There's no, you know, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, you know, battle that's too difficult for him. There's no stronghold that's too large. So, you know, it's hard to, you know, hear things like that and to imagine that people, you know, that we interact with are going through difficult things like that. But you never know what's going on in somebody's life. And so, you know, we want to do everything we can to live Christ through our daily life so that other people see that. Because, you know, she just a few years ago was somebody that needed Christ, whether she knew it or not. And when she met Christ, you know, it changed her life. And it didn't take away those things or make them not have happened. But, you know, like, we don't know when we're going to run into somebody that needs hope and that needs Christ. And I saw this quote this week that said it was something like, I'm going to butcher the quote, but it said something like, if somebody followed you for 24 straight hours, would they meet Jesus? Like, would they even know that you're a Christian? And so, you know, just think about, like, when you go throughout your life, from the time that you wake up in the morning until the time that you go to bed, if someone was just sitting there watching you every step of the way, let's say a lost person in this scenario, would they even know that you're a Christian? Would they, you know, I mean, if they showed up on a Sunday or a Wednesday, they'd probably see you at church. But besides just church attendance, that doesn't save us. Would they know that you're a Christian? Would they know that Jesus Christ is your Savior? Would they see you reading your Bible? Would they see you spending time in prayer? Would they see you treating people with kindness? Would they see you, you know, living out the things that the Bible tells us to do? Or would they see you like everybody else? And obviously there's nobody that's around you 24/7 that sees every single thing that you do or hears every word that you say. But, you know, it kind of struck me, like, how many of my days would they notice that I'm a Christian? Hopefully every day. Hopefully every day I'm doing something that would stand out to someone. But beyond that, you know, like, take it one step further, like, how often are we going out of our way to tell somebody that we're a Christian or show somebody that we're a Christian? So, 2 Kings, I tell you where to go, 2 Kings chapter 7. So, we're not going to be able to, like, go through this entire chapter, but I want to spend whatever 10 minutes left that we have talking about 2 Kings chapter 7. I read this, I don't know, maybe like a week or two ago, and I don't remember ever reading this story before. So I'm sure I have. I've read through the Bible. I don't recall this story. Perhaps maybe some of you have heard it. Maybe you've never heard this story. But it says in verse 1, then Elisha said, hear ye the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel and two measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria. So context about what he's talking about or what's going on. The chapter right before this, in chapter 6, they were talking about, there's two ladies, there's a famine going on in this area, and there was these two ladies, and they hatched a plan because they were starving to death, that, hey, today we will cook your son and we'll eat him, and then tomorrow we'll cook my son and we'll eat him. And, I mean, they were to the point where they were gonna die, or they resorted to killing their children and eating them in 2 Kings chapter 6. These two ladies did. Perhaps others did too, I don't know, but the story is recorded in 2 Kings 6. And the first day they ate the one kid, and then the second day the other lady was like, she took her kid and she hid him, and she was unwilling to kill her child. She just wanted to eat the other lady's child, I guess. So, the point being though, there's a famine going on. There's no food. People are resorting to crazy, drastic, you know, wicked, evil measures to survive. And so when he says that, you know, tomorrow about this time, you know, we're going to be selling flour, and it's not going to be that expensive, and 2 measures of barley are going to be sold for a shekel. So, you know, we're going to have a bunch of food tomorrow, flour and barley tomorrow, so much that people are going to be selling it for not even that much money. Okay, verse 2. That's the context of what's happened in verse 1. Verse 2. Then a lord on whose hand the king leaned answered the man of God and said, "Behold, if the Lord would make windows in heaven, might this thing be?" And he said, "Behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not eat thereof." This guy's like, yeah, maybe if God opened the windows of heaven, that might be possible. Ha ha ha. Unlikely, Elisha. And then Elisha responds to him and says, "Okay, you'll see it tomorrow, but you're not going to get to eat any of it." Fast forward, we're not going to read all of this, but basically there's these four guys that have leprosy. They're sitting outside the gate, because when you have leprosy, you can't be in the city because it could spread. And so when they're unclean and they're leprous, they have to go outside the city. So these four guys are sitting out there. They see the army of the Syrians right outside the walls. And they're like, well, if we go in the city, we're going to die with everybody else. There's no food for them. There's no food for us. If we sit out here, we're going to die. Let's all just go into the army, or the army of the enemy over here that's camping, and perhaps they will choose not to kill us. Perhaps they have food. Perhaps we can maybe survive even just a few days longer if we go into the enemy territory. So they come up with this plan. They walk out at twilight, and they go into the army, or the army camp of the Syrians, and it says in verse 5, "And they rose up in the twilight to go unto the camp of the Syrians. And when they were come to the uttermost part of the camp of Syria, behold, there was no man there. For the Lord had made the host of the Syrians to hear a noise of chariots and a noise of horses, even the noise of a great host. And they said one to another, Lo, the king of Israel hath hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us. Wherefore they arose and fled in the twilight and left their tents and their horses and their asses, even the camp as it was, and fled for their life." Okay, so these lepers show up and they're like, dude, nobody is here. So they start looting some of these tents and they're gathering up this gold and silver and they're like hiding it. They go back and they do it again and they're like, hold on, wait a minute. We should go tell somebody. We should tell this city of all of our people that's dying here, hey, there's food and stuff in the camp and there's nobody there. So they go in, they tell the king, or they tell the porter. He goes and tells the king, and the king at first thinks it's a trick. He says in verse 12, "And the king arose in the night and said unto his servants, I will now show you what the Syrians have done to us. They know that we be hungry, therefore are they gone out of the camp to hide themselves in the field, saying, when they come out of the city, we shall catch them alive and get into the city." So he thinks that what they're doing is they're hiding, you know, in the woods or whatever, and they're making it look like they've gone. So when they come out to raid their food and all their stuff, they're going to pounce out, they're going to get into the city, and then these people are going to be, you know, killed or captured or whatever. So that's what he thinks is happening here. So go to, let's see. I guess let's just read the next verse. Verse 13, "And one of the servants answered and said, Let some take, I pray thee, 5 of the horses that remain, which are left in the city. Behold, they are as all the multitude of Israel that are left in it. Behold, I say, they are even as all the multitude of the Israelites that are consumed. And let us send and see. They took therefore 2 chariots, and the king sent after the host of the Syrians, saying, Go and see. And they went after them unto Jordan, and lo, all the way was full of garments and vessels which the Syrians had cast away in their haste. And the messengers returned and told the king." So they sent out a scout, a couple people to go out and check it out. And they find what the lepers reported. Hey, they actually are gone. They've all fled. Verse 16, "And the people went out and spoiled the tents of the Syrians. So a measure of fine flour was sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel, according to the word of the Lord. And the king appointed the Lord, on whose hand he leaned, to have the charge of the gate, and the people trode upon him in the gate, and he died, as the man of God had said, who spake when the king came down to him." Okay, so this guy that at the beginning laughed about the man of God and his prophecy about what was to come, he said, you're going to see it, you're going to see the fulfillment of this prophecy, but you're not going to be able to partake in it. And so as it would go, The king stations him in the gate, and so many people are running to get food that they trample this guy and he dies. So he does see the prophecy be fulfilled, and he also doesn't get to partake in it, which is fulfillment of the second part of that prophecy. And it came to pass as the man of God had spoken to the king, saying, 2 measures of barley for a shekel and a measure of fine flour for a shekel shall be tomorrow about this time in the gate of Samaria. And that Lord answered the man of God. He's just repeating it. And so it fell out unto him, verse 20, for the people trod upon him in the gate and he died. Okay, so has anybody ever heard that story before? You've heard that story before? Okay. I feel like I've never heard it. I have. But what can we learn from it? What's something that you can take from this story and apply it in your life? Yes.
If God makes a promise, he'll keep it.
If God makes a promise, he'll keep it. Yeah.
Never doubt God, no matter how impossible
it seems. Yep. Never doubt God. Yeah.
Even when we're running into like enemy territory, for example, like God has already, like, he's like already, oh, I'm just going to pass the way while you're already coming to here. Knew that you're going to go over there and get food, and he's like already protected.
So you're saying God might have a plan.
Maybe.
That we don't always know about.
Honestly,
yeah. Never doubt the word of the Lord, for sure. Anybody else have anything? We serve a mighty God, you guys. I mean, for me, how many of you guys have been in church more than 10 years of your life? Okay. So like half of you, give or take. So, I said, how many of you guys have been in church more than half of your, or more than 10 years, I think is what I said. Yeah, more than 10 years. Okay. So, okay, the majority of us in this room. Okay, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes it seems like, okay, God in the Old Testament is vengeful and angry and does crazy amazing things, and he does all these things. And when Jesus is on the earth, he does amazing things. And then, like, somewhere in our brain, we just kind of feel like, I don't even know if we consciously think it, that God just stopped doing amazing things when the Bible stopped being written. I mean, does that sound like something you guys have thought? I don't know if I've consciously thought God doesn't do things anymore. But, I mean, you read the Old Testament, it's like, dude, he's creating the whole universe. And he's, you know, flooding the earth. And he's parting the sea. And some guy's getting swallowed by a whale. And he's raising people from the dead. And, like, and then Jesus shows up, and I mean, all kinds of things are happening in the Old Testament and the New Testament. And we read all these stories and we're like, well, yeah, obviously God can do anything, right? Nothing's impossible for God, save, you know, sin. But like, as far as power and demonstrating his power, he's all powerful. He can do literally whatever he wants. But then somehow we think, oh yeah, after Jesus and the disciples died, then Jesus just like stopped being powerful. God stopped being able to do miraculous things. That's not the case. Like, God still can do miraculous things. God's maybe not parting the Red Sea anymore. God's maybe not, you know, creating the universe anymore. But, like, God can still do miraculous things in our life. So maybe you just need to hear that. Maybe I need to remind myself of that. That, like, there is nothing too big for God. Okay, like, what you shared tonight, that's not too big for God. Like, put your phone away. Okay, no matter what it is that you're going through, there is nothing that is too big for God. He did not stop doing things when the Bible stopped being written. Okay, so yeah, all of the things you guys said are accurate. Things that you can get from that. God has a plan for our life. God can do impossible things. Listen to God when he speaks. All the things you guys said is true. But yeah, I mean, we don't know how God's going to do things. God can use some crazy circumstances. You read some crazy stories in the Bible, and perhaps you've lived some crazy stories in your life where, you know, God uses this thing that, like, it seems like there's no possible way that God could turn this thing around and use it miraculously. And then he does. You know, he brings your story to somebody else's life. That's what they needed to hear. God turns their life around. I mean, God can do some amazing things. So, my story doesn't tie in exactly with, or this passage doesn't tie in exactly with yours, but it does in the fact that, you know, God's powerful. And don't let us, don't you, don't me, limit what we think God can do just because we don't have the faith to believe that he can do those things. Okay, anybody have anything else to add? Questions or comments or... Do you have something? No. Okay.